So let's get on with the show.
Welcome, everybody, to the show.
The Bob and Sherry Show with Bob.
Here's what I do. I talkie on radio.
And Sherry.
And you are the most important women in broadcasting.
And now, broadcasting from the Palatial Bob and Sherry Studios, it's Bob and Sherry.
Happy gateway to the weekend. Woo-hoo! We will be back for our live happy hour tonight. Yeah. 7 o'clock Eastern on Facebook. We've missed y'all, so if you're free, come hang out with us. Just go to the Bob and Sherry Facebook page at 7 p.m. Eastern, and the live event, the live happy hour will be rolling. So my husband is finally home from his epic road trip. After months of being cooped up and recovering from his ortho surgery, he decided that he would get in his truck, and he would drive across the United States of America to visit his mother-in-law, who he is her favorite. She prefers him above all of us. And then I went to the NAB and flew home, and he drove home. So let me tell you, and this is marriage. So I'm really, really zippy with technology and the internet. And Kevin is really good at a lot of things, but I'm better at that one particular thing. So he would call me from the road and say, do you think you can find me a place to stay? Because typically he would camp, but he drove through a ton of snow in Colorado and New Mexico, and his legs all jacked up. So camping is not really a good idea right now. So I would go on booking.com, where, not to brag, but I'm a level 3 booking.com genius. So I get all these discounts and stuff. And I would find him places to stay, which is harder than you might think, depending on where you happen to be in the USA. Like if he called me and said, I'm 40 miles outside of Santa Rosa, New Mexico, that's easy. I just go to booking.com and I plug in Santa Rosa, New Mexico, and I find him a spot. But he called me, night before last and said, I'm on I-40 in Arkansas. And I want to stop somewhere between Little Rock and Memphis. Can you find me a place? So I pull up, find my iPhone, and I look at where he is on the interstate in Arkansas. And I'm just here to tell y'all. Now, I have there's a lot of beautiful stuff in Arkansas and a ton of really cool history. Like Fort Smith, Arkansas is one of the Bonnie and Clyde stops, and it's an epic part of that tale. And the little downtown is pretty much intact as it ever was, and it's really cool, and there's a couple of great state parks in Arkansas, but the interstate between Little Rock, Arkansas, and Memphis, Tennessee is an empty, echoing wasteland. So now I'm like, all right, I'll call you back. So now I'm trying to calculate the driving distance, and I'm looking at these little tiny towns like Briscoe and Carlisle and Hazen. And if you're wondering, I've never heard of any of those. Neither has the Days Inn or the Courtyard by Marriott. Okay. Like there are no hotels. So I'm studying. And the deal with Kevin is he doesn't care where he stays as long as he's one of these people who, if whatever the attraction is, if it's more than 2 miles off the interstate, he doesn't want to go. You know that mentality?
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah.
If he can't see it from the highway. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking, and there's a hotel in Briscoe, Arkansas, and there's one room left. And by the time I click reserve, it's already gone. So now I'm in Hazen, Arkansas, nothing. Finally, I get to Carlisle, Arkansas. And I'm like, I found a room for you in Carlisle, Arkansas. It's the only room that I can get. And I'm going to book it, and I'll text you the directions. So about an hour goes by, and I hear from him. And he's like, well, it looks better on the inside than it did on the outside, but it smells weird. And if you were with me, you would never stay here. And I'm thinking to myself, if I was with you, we'd have planned a little better, and I wouldn't have found myself looking for a place to sleep in the middle of the wasteland of I-40 in Arkansas. So when he got home, and this is, by the way, this is what you do when you're in a relationship with a person. They call you from some random stretch of highway and expect you to magically just be able to do whatever. He came home and he said, it used to be a Days Inn, but the new owners painted it black. which is very welcoming for the weary traveler.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It was Hotel pitch creepy. Black. It is painted pitch black. And when he first got in, he said it smelled really weird. And he was glad they put him in a smoking room because that was a smell he was at least familiar with. He could identify.
Something comforting.
So I just said, hey, you're welcome. And don't forget, a level3booking.com genius set those accommodations up for you. We got morons in the news coming up. Bob and Sherry, small plates, comedian Sean List. It's, or Joe List. It's Bob and Sherry. We're selecting weekly winners to enjoy a Caturday prize pack. Go to bobandcherry.com and enter to win a keepsake photo frame and a hide and scratch cat scratching box.
I'm going to read you this news story out of New Jersey and what happened to this woman. And I want you to tell me how you would handle this situation. A New Jersey toll collector's instinct helped save her from a possible life-threatening wreck. And it could have been worse than that. A Jersey Shore toll collector says following her gut instinct may have saved her life. Jessica Daly usually works as a toll collector on the Garden State Parkway. But a couple of days ago, Jessica said bad feelings kept waking her up in the middle of the night. She was sensing that she was going to be in a car accident. And she called in to work and said, I can't come in today. I'm freaked out. I can't come in today. And she made up some other excuse so that they would buy it. A few hours later, a garbage truck slammed into the Barnegat Toll Plaza and the collector's booth that she normally sits in. That collector who was in there replacing her for the day because she called in sick was hospitalized. He's going to be okay, but he has very serious injuries. Jessica says she wept when she heard, praying for those involved and thanking God that she had the gut instinct. So here's my question to you. You go back into work and the guy who has taken your place is out for like weeks, but he's coming back the first day, right? How do you handle that?
Lamar, you go first because I need to think about this. This is a tough
How do you one. Handle that? The two, your eyes meet. Now, you know, it wasn't your fault. However, you did call in sick because you felt I could be in a terrible accident if I leave my house today. And that guy took your place. What is the way you handle it? What's the first thing you say?
I don't feel much better than I did. But I wanted to come on in because I got to have his job.
Yeah, what I'd say.
Sherry, how would you handle this? And the guy's got this hangdog look on his face because he's still hurting, right?
I would just come right out and say, we'll call him Bob. Let's say his name is Bob. I would just say, Bob, I do not understand how the world works. I cannot believe that I was out sick that day and this happened to you. And I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to do it that way. Why do I get a feeling that the Bob we're talking about is going to say, instead of, well, I understand it's nobody's fault. Why do I get the feeling the guy's going to say, you know, I'm going to be limping the rest of my life now. And then you've got to come back again.
And I feel I'm just, first of all, it's what happened to you, Bob, is not my fault. I did not cause the accident that you're going to limp for the rest of your life. I happened to be out that day and you happened to be working. So
yeah,
I'm not going to be
codependent. You were out because you had a premonition that you were going to be in an accident. But I was the one in the accident.
Well, maybe you should pay a little more attention to your own premonitions and stop trying to, you know, be so.
Oh, are you kicking my ass? Because I want to be.
Here's what I say.
Hey,
here's what I say, Bob. I know you're going to have a limp,
But man, they make some cool canes. Some of them have like a lion's head on there. He said, I will buy you one of those canes. In fact, if you want one, it's got a sword inside of it, but I'll get you one of those. I don't care.
Yeah. I'm going to hit you with the cane as soon as you buy me the cane and give it to me. Oh, God, I wouldn't know what to say to the dude. I guess I would do what you said, Sherry, something like that. Like, oh, man, if I'd only known. Or if you'd only known, you would have come in, so sparing me. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. If you reacted like that, I would be like, you know, I'm sorry that you were injured, but you might want to get some help because this is not, I didn't do this to you. I didn't do this to you. I mean, things happen. I wasn't here. And by the way, do you know that I had a premonition or was I just out sick?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah, she shouldn't have said that she had a premonition. You know what I mean?
She maybe didn't tell coworkers that she had a premonition. Well, you know, how many times in all of our years together have I told you, Bob, my Sicilian second sight, and you roll your eyes? Max, how often is my Sicilian second sight wrong?
You're 85%.
Yeah. Oh, so
good.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe shame on you for being so close-minded. Maybe you could work on that while you're recovering.
She called me and said, hey, I got this premonition. I wouldn't go into work if I were you because you're going to take my spot.
Yeah. You
think I would not listen?
Nope.
Oh. Oh, where would I get the notion that I think you would not listen? I know you would not listen. Morons in the News is next. It's Bob and Sherry. Morons in the News is sponsored by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here we go.
It's Bob and Sherry.
Don't be a moron.
With Morons in the News.
You know, when you think of a lawyer, you always think of a person that is so detail-oriented and seldom, if ever, wrong. But that is not always the case. In England, getting divorced is as easy as clicking a link on a website. You don't have to go through all of the hoops that you do in the United States, evidently. You go to a website and you can divorce that person. Now, you do have to go through, you know, agreeing to certain things. I get the dog, you know, you get a car, whatever it may be. But unfortunately, a lawyer at a high-profile law firm clicked a button for the wrong couple, and they were divorced 21 minutes later. Now, this was a couple who was on that website, and they wanted a divorce, but nothing had been agreed to. It took 2 days for the wife's attorney to figure out the error. The attorney was supposed to click the button for another case, but didn't navigate that page. Instead, Mr. and Mrs. Williams are now legally divorced before even agreeing to anything surrounding the financials of their life. The law firm explained the mistake to the court, but the court rejected a request to reverse it. The person who owns that firm has said, "We are really, really sorry." That is such a strange situation. The whole idea, I reacted like you did, that there's a website you can go to, but they keep it really, really simple. So there's no, you know, big charge for getting a divorce attorney. They are divorced and they have to now figure out how to navigate what they're agreeing to. But they are divorced.
And you know, the guy who did that mistake, he's sorry. He is. He said he was sorry. But moved on. He's moved on. That's not his chaos to clean up.
No,
those aren't his
not.
New expenses to take on.
No.
I hate
and he's sending you
people.
A bill. He's sending you a bill even though he made a mistake.
Which I think is shameful. Like, I think they're step up. You made the mistake. You can't fix it. But now these people are getting doubly punished? No.
Yeah, that's right. Lamar?
Well, Sherry, it seems like you were not the only person that was concerned about the eclipse being tied in with the rapture. A woman who left over $1,000 in tips at a Florida taco restaurant because she thought she was going to be swept up in the biblical rapture on the day of the eclipse now wants a rapture refund. She's claiming that the restaurant defrauded her. A server at the restaurant said that the woman was very nice, but her bill came to $40, to which she added a $300 tip and wrote on the receipt, "In case you don't rise on the 8th. The woman returned a few days later and tipped another server $777. And when the rapture didn't happen, the woman returned to ask for her tip back, saying that the restaurant changed the tip amount. And the server explained, "Her claims of fraud are literally impossible. We bring the card reader to the table, and it's the guest who decides the tip amount by either pressing a preset option or entering a custom tip." That's exactly what she did. "So it's physically impossible for us to do anything. Both my coworker and I have already received our tips with our paychecks, and we obviously have to pay income tax on them. Returning the money to her at this point is literally impossible." I think this woman that ate there, her generosity.
Girl, can I just say, girl, that's why you didn't get raptured. That kind of attitude is going to keep you down here.
You have to admire the faith, don't you? I mean, that's real faith.
I can admire the faith, but what kind of faith is it that acts like that? That's not the right faith. I wasn't worried about the rapture on the eclipse because I knew it didn't matter how good a person I tried to be. God would be like, "Girl, if I suck you up, who's going to know what to make for dinner?" I knew I had to stay or my family would starve.
Exactly.
All right, and our moron today is out of Venice, Florida. Mary Hollenbach was inside her house watching TV, minding her own business, when guess who came to dinner? An 8-foot alligator opened the screen door and strolled into her kitchen.
Oh, no.
And I have the pictures. And you will not believe the monster, this alligator, walking through this poor woman, Mary's kitchen. She called wildlife. She called 911. Deputies came. Fish and Game came. They were able to safely remove and relocate the gator. But damn, if they could just open your screen door and walk on in. I don't know. Where are we now?
I just can't imagine. And it was a big one.
I think 8 feet is a big one, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if a little caiman comes in, that's one thing. It's an 8-foot alligator opening your door and coming into your kitchen. We're gonna get that posted up on the Bob and Sherry Facebook straight ahead. A round of small plates. This is Bob and Sherry.
Happy hour tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page.
Since we were just talking about the eclipse in Morons in the News, so my husband got on the road Sunday afternoon, April 7th, and of course the eclipse was April 8th. Right. And I told him, you better plan, because there's like 27 million eclipse tourists. And it's going to be wild on the roads because he was driving right into the totality. And so he's on the road. He's on Interstate 40 heading west. And he called me and he said, this is so creepy. The light is like twilight. So heading toward the totality, the light is like twilight. And there's not another car going west. All the traffic is coming east. There are all these electronic highway signs warning about eclipse traffic and slowdowns and issues. He said, I didn't see a car. I didn't see a truck. I didn't see a cop. For miles, he was the only vehicle on I-40 West. It was like the end of the world. It was like Stephen King's The Stand.
Yeah. That is spooky. So everybody was pulled over, or everybody was waiting for getting the experience? Is that what he's guessing?
I guess, yeah. That's what we were guessing. There was a lot of traffic coming east, but he was all alone for a long time going west. And at one point, he thought maybe he missed a sign that the road was closed, and that's why there was no other traffic on it. And it was really giving him the willies, and it was getting darker and darker and darker. Can you imagine how weird and surreal that would be? You're all alone in your car.
Yeah.
You're the only one on I-40.
Yeah.
And it's dark. It's the afternoon and it's getting darker and darker.
And then the aliens got you.
Yeah, right.
Listen, if he gets abducted by the aliens and I'm not with him, do you know how I'm never going to let that go? I'm never going to let that go, and he knows it. It's Bob and Sherry. Small Plates is sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts, your professional parts people.
It's time now for Bob and Sherry's Small Plates. I am so excited about the remake of The Naked Gun. It's taking shape. Leslie Nielsen's role is going to be taken on by the amazing Liam Neeson. Is that not fantastic?
This I cannot wait to see.
I think it's going to be so great.
It's going to be great.
Can we hear one of the sound drops from the original Naked Gun?
I've heard police work is dangerous.
It is. That's why I carry a big gun.
Aren't you afraid it might go off accidentally?
I used to have that problem.
And what did you do about it?
I just think about baseball.
So that was his love interest, Priscilla Presley. Who do you think they're casting to replace Priscilla Presley? Liam Neeson as Frank. And who plays Frank's love interest in the new Naked Gun remake? Take a guess.
It's going to be somebody who's not like an actor, I bet. So
no, she's an actress.
I know.
Not a serious one. And I think it's out of left field. It's Pamela Anderson. They're giving her the role.
Oh.
She hasn't done a lot.
I think
recently.
She'd be perfect for that.
I think
yes,
you're right.
Yes, you would.
Yeah, you're
she
exactly
would.
Right. Seth MacFarlane is producing along with other people. The plot is still under wraps. And speaking of, this is brilliant. Speaking of casting, season two of Wednesday. The creepy Addams Family television series. They got a new cast member, Steve Buscemi. Is that not? Is he not perfect?
Yes.
Is he playing Wednesday's God. Uncle? It, because he's got to be a member of the family.
You would think.
I would think.
You would think. Yeah. So that's going to be a real plus. I mean, if Steve Buscemi walks into your office or your studio, wherever you work, you're going, whoa, you know, let alone with scary makeup or whatever on Wednesday.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
going to be,
he'll
that's be a awesome. Great choice there. Listen to this. Pet owners can pick out their dog's smell from a lineup. The Czech University of Life Sciences in Prague tested 53 dog owners to find out whether they could pick their dog's smell out of a lineup. Each person were given jars with 6 gauze that had the scent of their dog and 5 others. 75% of the pet parents picked their dog's jars.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
I think you could do that
with Finn and Darby?
Yeah.
I could.
I could too.
Do you really think you could?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. I think I could too. TikTok date night. They have a trend on TikTok now, and it is painting each other, and it's starting to take off. So it works like this. It's not like you are painting on somebody else's skin. It's not nude painting. But the two of you get together, you know, in your house or wherever, and you have 2 easels, and you look at each other, and then you paint each other. This is the worst idea I've ever heard. Mary would come out looking like a skinny cat because I can't paint. I'm just terrible about. And
yeah,
then you do this big you do the reveal at the end of the date. It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. This is kind of interesting, and I'm for it. X is going to try to stop bots by charging new users to post initially. Elon Musk says that new users are going to pay for the basic feature of the app upon signing up. The fee will unlock the ability to post on the site. Otherwise, it won't be possible. He posted the other day that he believes that charging a small fee early will curb the bot problem. He does note that after 3 months, the fee will be dropped. And he stresses the current AI and troll farms can pass the "Are you a bot?" with ease. Well, heck, so can I. So I actually, you know, I'm against fees, but
that's because you're not a bot.
Yeah, right.
I'm really against this, but yeah. Well, I mean, he's trying everything he can to destroy the platform, and so far, succeeding.
Right.
And this should be the finishing touch. Yeah. Yeah.
There it is, right there. And that is Small Plates. This is Bob and Sherry.
Happy Hour tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page.
All right, we're going to play something for you now. It's a song by James McCartney and Sean Lennon. And if those names sound familiar, they should, because they are the sons of Paul McCartney and Julie and John Lennon. The greatest songwriting duo maybe ever in rock and pop music. And so the song is called Primrose Hill. And James McCartney said that he had a vision when he was growing up as a child in Scotland. It was a beautiful summer's day. And he said he saw his true love in his mind's eye. And so Primrose Hill, which is the name of the song, he wrote that about kind of finding that person and getting that love going on. And of course, he said, you know, it's really hard to live up to the Beatles. And then he said something very interesting for Beatles fans to hear. He said that when the Beatles ended and Paul McCartney started Wings, he said, even my dad found it hard living up to the Beatles. So that when James McCartney began playing music, he did it under a different name, because he said, I had to do my time as a musician and wait until I had a good body of songs. And when my music was ready, I didn't want to sit around. I want to earn my own living, but I also didn't want to get breaks because of who my father was, which is interesting. And, you know, yeah. You kind of always knew that it was hard for Paul McCartney to go on and not constantly be compared to the Beatles, and then to hear his own kid talk about it. So let's listen. This is called Primrose Hill.
We laid on Primrose Hill, didn't know it still. You meant what you said. An overcast sultry day, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. There forever, forgot everything. Kiss beneath the stars, shooting into the hills. The stars exploded into a flame. Always remember. Primrose Hill, I'll always remember Primrose Hill, Primrose Hill. You disappear forever. Forever's a long word, but never's not long enough to be loving you forever and a day. I looked into your eyes, got such a great surprise. You take my breath away. Always remember Primrose Hill, Primrose Hill. We'll always remember Primrose Hill, Primrose Hill.
So what do y'all think? And by the way, not to give anybody vertigo, but they released that song, Primrose Hill, 62 years after the Beatles released Love Me Do in the UK.
It's no Penny Lane. And I don't mean to throw rocks. I really don't. Was that McCartney's kid, James, singing lead?
I don't know who's singing what. I don't have any visual on it.
It sounds like
Lennon.
The phrasing. Yeah, I agree with you, Sherry. The phrasing was more Lennon-esque. That's why I asked that. I don't know. When you heard McCartney and Lennon sing, you could hear both of their voices blending together. When the harmony came in, it just seemed almost like it was a chorus. It wasn't as personal for me.
I mean, I don't know, because you know that I can't hear anything musically. All I know is it's got to be impossible to carry that legacy and not be compared and not live up to it. But, you know, they deserve their shot.
Yeah.
And it is, it's a beautiful song. It may not be everybody's jam, but it's a beautiful song. And we're going to post it up on the Bob and Sherry Facebook if you want to listen again. It's Bob and Sherry.
Everyone Needs a Laugh is sponsored by Easy Cater. Easy Cater has everything you need to make food for work work.
It's time now for Everyone Needs a Laugh. Here's comedian Joe List.
Oh, stop it. Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm happy to be here. I have a lot of friends. I love my friends, but I also don't like them. I don't know if you guys have that. I was talking to my buddy the other day. Sometimes I have trouble sleeping. I get anxious, you know, you can't sleep. I told my buddy, I was like, man, I couldn't sleep last night. He goes, oh, you gotta sleep. I was like, no, I know. I wanted to sleep. You're misunderstanding. I'm not quitting sleeping. Then he goes, lack of sleep can lead to dementia. Nice, I'm glad I brought this up with you. That'll help me tonight because last night I was tossing and turning, not thinking about dementia. But tonight, I'll contemplate dementia. That'll put me right to bed. Here's some good sleep advice if you have trouble sleeping. Count backwards from 500. I don't know if you've ever heard that. That focuses you on something so you're not going crazy, but it's boring enough that you'll fall asleep. It works if it works. If it doesn't work, it's like a countdown to homicidal breakdown. You start counting, you get into the 20s, you're like, I don't think this is gonna work out for me, you know? Very unlikely you're gonna be like, 3, 2, 1. Oh my God, I'm out. How did they time it so well? I got a buddy, we were in Manhattan Beach, California recently. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Manhattan Beach. Very beautiful area. Yeah. Spectacular, Southern California. We're walking up the beach, the boardwalk. It's like Pacific Ocean on the left. Big, huge houses, very wealthy area. I pointed to like a mansion. I was like, man, I'd kill to have this house. My buddy goes, you wouldn't want to pay the taxes on that thing. You know these people, the taxes people? I'm like, yeah, I'm not paying taxes in this situation. I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's a nice house. I'm not picturing myself as I am in my current financial situation, like, I can't swing this. I should have wished for a house in rural Indiana where I could afford the property taxes. I was just making small talk. I didn't think they were gonna give me the house and then charge me property taxes on it, but. I got a friend, we had a gig recently, he's a comedian, he was opening for me, his name is Steve, and we were on the same flight. I was in first class, I'm better than him. And I got on the plane, and I was sitting there, and this really beautiful woman sat next to me on the plane, very attractive, which has nothing to do with the story. I just want you to know that very attractive women sit next to me. You know, if an airline tells them they have to, but still cool. And my friend Steve, he got on the plane. Now comedians, we're kind of like ball busters, you know, we like to give each other flack. So when he got on the plane, I said, hey, I hope your bag doesn't fit in the overhead. Not hilarious, just fun, whatever. And then this lady, she goes, that's a really dark thing to wish on somebody. Which is annoying, because that's not a dark thing to wish. Dark would be like if I said, I hope the plane crashes and you're the only one that dies. That would be a dark thing. So I just said, oh, we're friends. It was just like, just my way of being like, well, why don't you mind your own business? I was like, we're friends. And then she said, that makes it worse. Now I'm furious, because now we're fighting. And once again, she's wrong, because that doesn't make it worse. That makes it better. It would be way worse if random people were getting on a plane and I was sitting in first class going, hey, I hope your bag doesn't fit in the overhead. Like, do I know you? No, you don't know me. I don't like your face. Just get back there. I hope your day is ruined. First class. You know? I do love my friends, but they're dumb. I'm dumb. I'm dumb. I want you to know. I'm dumb. My friends are... You know how, like, you're dumb and your friends are dumb, so you're all dumb together? But then occasionally your friend will do something that takes it to a new level where you're kind of thinking, am I doing community service by hanging out with this person? My buddy and I, we went to an art museum. We're not really art guys, but I was like, how hard can it be to look at art? We walk in. My buddy walks up to a painting. Pretend there's a painting here. He walks up. He just starts rubbing the painting with his hand. I swear to God, just all five fingers. And then I had to say, I'm like, are you joking? Because if you're joking, that's hilarious. I don't want to ruin a good bit if you're kidding. And he was like, what? And I had to say, you don't touch paintings. And then he said, why? And that's when I realized I'm only a little bit smarter than him, because I was like, I actually don't know why. It is dry. And I was like, you know what? I'm done. Maybe I'm wrong. So I just started touching the painting as well. By the way, touches paintings. That's a fun term for your friend who's kind of a dum-dum, you know? Like, when I was growing up, we use terms that you can't use anymore. But touches paintings, that's kind of nice. You can be like, this is my friend Pete. He's a good guy. He touches paintings, but he's a nice guy. You're going to like him. You guys are great. My name's Joe List. Thank you so much.
We'll get Joe posted up at BOBANDSHERI.com. Click the menu tab. Look for Everyone Needs a Laugh. And while you're there, why not nominate a teacher who really deserves something special, like a trip to the Margaritaville Beach Resort in Fort Myers Beach, Florida? Yeah, buddy. BOBANDSHERI.com. This is Bob and Sherry.
Mother's Day will be here before you know it. Avoid the last-minute crunch by ordering now from the Bob and Sherry store.
Hurry, hurry, hurry.
We have some great stuff and a great deal for you. Mother of all mothers tote bags, large enough to hold all the gear for your family outing.
Wow.
Mother of all mothers nightshirts. One size fits most, and it's a great beach cover-up. That's in addition to our regular line of Bob and Sherry books, drinkware, and wearables.
Okay, that sounds like a fair deal.
And we're giving you 15% off your entire order by using the code MOM23. That's MOM23 at checkout. Code expires on Mother's Day. The Bob and Sherry store, conveniently located at bobandsherry.com.
Bring whatever you drink and celebrate Happy Hour, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page. Tonight, it's Bob and Sherry.
You know, believe it or not, there is something worse than gas station sushi. There really is. Yeah. And it's gas station heroin, okay? Gas station heroin, not good.
Oh,
it's not good.
Bad.
It is a non-FDA approved drug, and it's on shelves in convenience stores, and it's available to anyone. And it claims to treat depression and pain, but it is very addictive. And it's being marketed as a dietary supplement. That's the loophole that allows them to bottle this up and sell it. And it'll be under the names like Neptune's Fix or Pegasus or Zaza. There's a whole bunch more names. And the actual drug is tianeptine. And before 2023, New Jersey, they've been tracking this, New Jersey Poison Control Center got calls about this drug once, maybe twice a year. Then, all of a sudden, after 2023, it started jumping. It jumped to 6 calls in 2 weeks. Last year, they had 391 calls that had symptoms of agitation, delirium, low blood pressure, seizures, even cardiac arrest. Some people have died from this. And the center sent bottles of this stuff to a lab for analysis and found out that it also contains ingredients that are not on the label, such as synthetic cannabis and some other stuff. You just don't know what's in it. So since it's not regulated, you just can't know what it is. And some states have already banned it.
You know, you guys, I'm so nostalgic for the bygone America where you'd go into a gas station and you didn't know what was in the burrito, you know? But you didn't have to worry about ODing on it. I mean, most of us did not OD on gas station burritos. Like, what the heck, Lamar? How is this allowed to be sold?
It's a loophole. It's a loophole about it being like a supplement. Now, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, some other places, they have banned it. But there are some gas stations you can still do it. So here's the deal. If you're in a gas station, go for the sushi. The worst thing that could happen is food poisoning. It won't kill you. It might make you wish you were dead, but it won't kill you. But stay away from heroin that you can find in a gas station. Not good. I mean, stay away from heroin anyway. Heroin itself's not good, but especially not gas station heroin. This is Bob and Sherry.
Happy Hour tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page.
Listener time, listener time. We would love to have you on the Bob and Sherry Show, and you can get on by calling 844-52-SHERRY. Leave us your thoughts just like that. Or go to wherever you get your apps, hit the little microphone right there, and get the Bob and Sherry app, and hit the little microphone and leave us what you're thinking about. Here we go.
Bob and Sherry, this is Darcy. I love all of you guys. This is Darcy from Astoria, Oregon, and I did meet you guys. I came there with my dog, Daisy May, a couple years ago. Anyway, I was wondering what happened to the weird stuff, the Friday show. You guys didn't have it on this last week, and I really missed it. I love you guys. You're so much fun. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, thank you so much for listening to True Weird Stuff. So we will be back next Friday with a brand new episode, which I think is you're really going to enjoy. It's about one of the first influencers and the thing that he influenced. And I can't even tell you what he influenced because Bob will run screaming from the room. So,
cannibalism?
Bob, you'd rather talk about cannibalism than this.
Really?
And I know that I know you're thinking, what would I?
Intestinal parasites.
It's in that area. It's in that neighborhood.
Oh, that area. Yeah. Okay. Right.
So we paused True Weird Stuff mostly to give Max a break because it's been extra chaotic and insane around here. And we were skidding into every weekend, like literally on fire. And we needed to catch up. So we will be back on the 26th with a brand new episode. And you can't find the website right now because it's been attacked. Because, of course, it's worth about 13 cents, but come for it, hackers. So we're in the process of rebuilding. I swear, like, we need to get this whole thing saged. This whole enterprise of ours needs to be saged by, like, a magic person because we are so cursed. But thank you very much for listening to that and for asking. It will return. All right, we have another one.
Hi, guys. This is Barbara from Yuma, following up on your story about the stork and the fisherman. My folks retired to an old barracks building in the middle of the Mojave Desert, and Dad had befriended all the animals, including the ravens that he fed every day. The ravens would never appear anywhere to anyone else in that canyon. And one day, the space heater ignited the couch, and the whole place went up in flames, and the only thing my parents could do would be to get in the car and drive away. Later on, their neighbors told them that they weren't aware of the house burning, but that suddenly outside their homes on the power poles were loaded with ravens yelling and screaming and really carrying on. And again, as I said, the people weren't aware that the house was on fire and they had never seen those ravens before. So I think they were kind of doing their things to alert people. Just saying. Love the show and all you do. Bye.
Hark the raven nevermore. Wow. Please, Lord, hear me right now. If I'm lucky enough to ever retire, don't put me in a barrack in the middle of the desert alone with animals. Please.
Listen, I didn't even think about it till I heard this message. But when we were visiting my mom, I took my brother and his wife up to Bryce Canyon. They had never been. And it's spectacular. I mean, there are things that Bryce Canyon is the largest collection of hoodoos in the whole wide world. Hoodoos are these rock formations that look like drip sand. So when you look down into the canyons at Bryce Canyon, it looks like this mystical medieval ruins, rock formations that look like slumping castles and armies. I mean, it's just so spectacular. So we're standing there looking over this incredible beauty, and two enormous ravens came flying in low right over our heads and caught a thermal and began drifting. They were so big, they looked like jet black hawks. They were gigantic. Wow. These are magnificent birds and so intelligent. And to watch these two enormous black birds just riding the current like that, it was something. It was super duper cool.
That is a moment when you see nature, you know, in its reality.
Oh my gosh.
Right in front of
your
eyes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So don't go anywhere. We're going to talk about Uranus, the planet. Don't be ridiculous. We're going to talk about Uranus, the body part, on True Weird Stuff. It's Bob and Sherry.
Bring whatever you drink and celebrate. Happy Hour, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page. Tonight, it's Bob and Sherry.
One of Bob's all-time favorite TV shows has wrapped, HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. And the star, Larry David, it was on for, like, let me tell you how long it was on for. Olivia was a baby when Curb Your Enthusiasm started. That's how long that run was. It's amazing. Yeah. So Larry David went on The Tonight Show and told this great story about how when he was like 12, his mom wrote to an advice columnist in the New York Post.
She wrote a letter to the psychiatrist who had a column in the New York Post, Dr. Franz Blau. She wrote a letter to Dr. Franz Blau. And I read it because she used to talk about Dr. Franz Blau.
Yeah.
So I would read the column and I recognized that this was my mother writing to the psychiatrist.
What was she saying?
I know it. I know
what she's saying.
She's saying that my son, he's 12 years old, he hates people. He hates people. He's morose.
Yeah.
He's taciturn. And what really gave it away, he doesn't trick or treat. He doesn't go out trick or treating. That's me. I didn't trick or treat. I knew it was me.
You got to get this article. You got to cut this out.
I should have saved it. But it was me.
That's hilarious.
Did you know, trick or treating.
You didn't like trick or treating.
This is stupid, you know.
What?
Yeah, first of all, you got strangers. You're dealing with strangers all over the place. Every apartment is a stranger.
Yeah.
It's rude, too, banging on someone's door. Yeah. It's stupid.
At 12 years old, you thought this?
Yeah, I knew that at 12. I didn't want to see all those people. And then the costume?
Yeah.
You got to put a costume on?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Yeah. You can, no. That's a, you have to wear that all day.
When's the last time you put a costume on in your life? In your life?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't do it.
Yeah. Cannot put costumes on.
So I did really love that show. I'm going to go in a different direction here. I really like that show a lot. Do you know what my two favorite moments are? And it's not one of the cringeworthy things that Larry David did that you just go, oh, I can't believe he said that to the priest or whatever it is. It was an opening, two openings of the show. So you hear the theme. In the first one, Larry David is standing in what looks like his kitchen with a broom, and he is banging on the fire thing, you know, the alarm, the fire alarm on the ceiling of his kitchen. He's just hitting it and hitting it. Who has not been in that situation where the thing starts chirping and you can't find which one it is, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you find it. And you go up there and you hit the button and it's still chirping, and maybe you change the battery or you don't have a battery. And finally, you just want to get a broom or a stick and just knock the crap out of it. And then he goes, he doesn't say one word and goes into the show and does something else. The other one was he's in his kitchen again and he's got what looks like some sort of a tool, but it's in that plastic wrap, the clamshell wrap.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's hitting it, and he's pulling on it, and he's banging it on the counter, and he's pulling it, and it won't come loose, and then he goes into something else. Is that not one of the most frustrating things that you go through with everyday working, that damn clamshell? To say nothing about, you know, what it does to the environment, because you have all that plastic. And I guess they have to use it. But it's just so frustrating. Those moments spoke to me more than the cringeworthy things on that show, because it just said that, and the time where he was supposed to go to a wedding and he's in a Starbucks with his wife and she gets a call saying that the wedding has been postponed, and the joy on his face. I get it. I get what that joy is. That he goes, oh, we don't have to go. Oh, coffee for everyone. What would you like? And he said, Give me a coffee and put in some of that vanilla crap you use. It's just those moments that we've all felt. And he was a genius at doing that, wasn't he? It's Bob and Sherry. Can You Believe This is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com.
You read it once.
I don't believe that.
And then you read it again.
I can't believe this.
It's Bob and Sherry's.
Believe this.
I cannot believe this.
Well, the names William and Caroline Herschel probably don't mean anything to you, but William and Caroline were brother and sister, and they are responsible for discovering some things that affect our lives every single day back in 1781. So it was March 13th, and William Herschel, he wasn't trained as an astronomer. He had no real training of any kind at all. But he was a musician, actually. He spent most of his life playing music. But he began, he became like obsessed with the night sky. And he became more and more enthusiastic about it. And he was up one night, and he was staring up at the stars, and he was looking at the constellation Gemini when he thought he spotted a comet. And even though it wasn't shaped like a comet, when it moved, it looked too slow to be a comet. So he went and got a telescope. Now, a telescope in 1781 was basically a metal tube with a magnifying glass. But he took that metal tube and he pointed at that thing that he thought was a comet. And amateur astronomer William Herschel discovered the planet Uranus, which now we're supposed to call Uranus because science is tired of all of us making jokes about finding Uranus, okay? But he found the planet Uranus. He first wanted to name it the Georgium Sidis, George's star, in honor of King George III. But his buddy said, that's not dignified. And we need to give it a name that isn't so nationalist. You know, the stars belong to everyone. So they named it Uranus, which was after the Greek god Uranus, the son of the goddess of the earth. And Uranus was buddies with the ruler of the world, Saturn, and was eventually overthrown and blah, blah, blah. So it was a much more big time superstar name. So it became the planet Uranus. Well, William, along with his sister Caroline, went on to discover more than 2,500 nebulae in the sky. They made up the word asteroid, and they invented several different new telescopes. And it was Caroline who polished those telescope mirrors, who stayed up all night recording what they saw. She edited and published all of the star catalogs that they wrote. She described 14 new nebulae. She assembled this whole catalog of star clusters, and she discovered 8 comets. This brother and sister team in 1781 with nothing more than basically a big magnifying glass. And that's how we have the planet Uranus. Isn't that the best, coolest story?
It is. So let me get this straight. Brother and sister, male and female. And so she does the cataloging and she polishes the instruments and cleans them.
And writes down all of the information. You have to understand, when I say polishing the telescope glass, I don't mean she took some Windex and a Bounty. The glass has to be ground, and it's extremely technical to create the glass you would need to discover all these comets and stars and star systems and planets, homemade.
So she's polishing it, and she's grinding it, and she's cataloging it, and she's staying up and working very long hours. And he is just basically looking into it and saying, that's cool. Their relationship, for some reason, hits close to home for me. I just don't know.
Something about it.
I don't know.
So wait, she's looking out, right? And she says, I discovered a new planet. And he said, my ass. And he said, there it is. Uranus.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
There it is right there.
Well, I have found, Bob, that behind every successful Uranus is a woman polishing a telescope. That's certainly been my experience.
I don't know why
in the work world. I'm going to post. This is just such a fun story. I'm going to post this up on the Bob and Sherry Facebook. Do not go anywhere, because we've got a whole bunch of stuff coming up for you, including the shocking truth about the phrase OMG. It's Bob and Sherry.
Bring whatever you drink and celebrate Happy Hour, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page. Tonight, it's Bob and Sherry.
Well, we all know that Michael Jordan is one of the richest athletes in the world. He's worth well over $1 billion. And he actually owns a couple of yachts, but he actually rents a yacht. Now, what kind of yacht would he rent? The one he rents is owned by an Indian businessman, Samir Gihalt, and is reportedly worth $80 million. And it has some amenities and luxuries that most houses don't even think about. They'd have two jacuzzis, a dining room, a beach club, a movie theater, a gym, and a spa, and a basketball court as well. And I guess that's why Jordan, maybe he likes it. I don't know. It's not just that, you know, he has the private chef. It's got eight cabins for guests. The total crew of 19 includes a captain and some sailors and that kind of stuff. It's available for charter for people or that are in the business of really spending their time hanging out on luxury yachts and can afford it. And, of course, Michael Jordan can't afford it. But he does have several yachts, but it offers something that he just likes a lot. And he's willing to fork out the money. It's the yacht is 230 feet long, okay? God. So how much you think it costs to rent out this boat for a week?
Per a week?
$600,000.
That's a good Max. Guess.
Man, I have no idea.
Bob?
I'll go a little bit lower. I'm going to say $500,000.
Doc, what do you think?
What about it, Doc?
$2 million.
$780,000 a week.
Oh.
So sure, now think about
close.
It, though.
Yeah.
That's
close,
a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Hey,
but,
you know what I love? You know what I love? In America, you can take a tax deduction for your yacht, but I had an accountant tell me that I should just suck up the cost of my yearly subscription to People Magazine because I wouldn't want to get a red flag from the IRS.
Doesn't that tick you off? Does that not just tick you off?
Tick me off is baseline. I am rioting with spears and torches. Are you kidding? Yeah.
It
costs $150,000 to fill it up with fuel. So it is expensive to run. The life of the rich.
It's Bob and Sherry.
It's Bob and Sherry, the podcast.
I think we touched on this subject when it first kind of poked its head up, but it's becoming really, really, really real. And it almost sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit, but you know that Red Lobster is considering its bankruptcy options. They blame the $11 million loss that they've had on the endless shrimp promotion. And I feel like I could have told them.
I wonder if somebody got fired over that.
$11 million. Now, there were other factors. The CFO of Red Lobster said mostly it's endless shrimp. But also, you know, there were some problems with, you know, leases for restaurant locations and, you know, the cost of labor. Because somebody's got to cook those endless shrimp and bring them to your table. But in all seriousness, like, all you can eat endless shrimp? Doesn't that sound like a recipe for bankruptcy?
Well, all right, here's the deal. Here's the deal. And I'm a Red Lobster customer. I hadn't been in a while, but I'm a Red Lobster. There's some stuff at the Red Lobster I enjoy eating. I do. I like a cheese biscuit just like anybody else does. But this is what happens when the CEOs, they don't eat at Red Lobster, okay? They don't eat there. Because if they eat there and they walk through the restaurant and looked around, they would say to themselves, endless shrimp for $20, that's a loser. See, here's
under.
The deal.
Yeah.
If you're an all-you-can-eat restaurant and you're serving green beans and fried chicken and rice and gravy, have at it, boys. Eat all you want, because if you give me about $12 or $14, I'm ahead of you and you can't catch me. I mean, you just can't, okay? But when you're putting out them shrimp, I'm sorry. And you know what? I could eat a lot of shrimp. I could eat a lot of shrimp. Could you not eat a lot of shrimp if you wanted to?
I think I think I could eat more than $20 worth of shrimp.
Yes,
yes.
I could.
I love
yes,
the, I coconut. Push the coconut shrimp.
I would push everything else away. Don't bring me nothing. Don't bring me lettuce. Don't bring me no potato. You just keep bringing them shrimp. I mean, come on now. Let's go.
I'll stick a Cheddar Bay biscuit in my pocket for tomorrow. But bring out another round of these crustaceans.
That's right. I'll put some jelly in that tomorrow. But I'm just telling you. And when you see this is not working, okay, you own the restaurant. You're the CEO. You can sit down to your computer and type an email and say, I'm sorry, folks. The endless shrimp has ended. It's done.
Yeah, we're done.
It's done. Y'all win. Y'all beat me at my own game.
Here's what Red Lobster is saying about themselves. So this is what this is their take on it. They said initially that we would offer endless shrimp just as a special promotion. It was for a limited time only, and people would storm the restaurants. And then they decided, and this is where I'm like, God, we're just morning radio DJs, but even we can see the flaw here. Then they decided that they would put it on the menu permanently, and it did increase traffic to the restaurant by 4%, which is a lot for Red Lobster.
Yeah,
that's good. Here's the thing they didn't anticipate, that they didn't see coming. The endless shrimp viral videos on like TikTok, where people would demonstrate just how much shrimp they could pack down at the Red Lobster. And those things went viral, and people started, content creators were like, man, that endless shrimp video got fill-in-the-blank engagement. I'm going to do it even better. And so then they had people cruising on in there whose sole purpose for being at the Red Lobster was to shoot a social media video. So the combination of 7 days a week, endless shrimp, and then people competing for who could make more gluttonous endless shrimp videos is literally pushing Red Lobster into Chapter 11. This is, I'm just going to say, this is the most American business story possibly of my lifetime. Prove me wrong.
They said they lost $11 million, okay, in the third quarter. So instead of being $20, they raised it to $23. Then that didn't do it, so they raised it to $25. By the next quarter, they had lost $12 million. People, if you lost $11 million and you raised it $2, you would have to have millions and millions of people paying you the extra. I mean, you know what I think is happening? I think they are being run by people that are no longer in radio. You think that might be it?
I do. I think so. I feel like some of my former coworkers are in the C-suite at Red Lobster. Because I have been in radio meetings where they said, the people are bankrupting us by eating shrimp. I know. Let's put it on the menu every day. I swear that is the logic. It's Bob and Sherry.
At the Bob and Sherry Show, we know there are all kinds of different cats, and we'd like to see yours. Just submit a pic of you and your cat to bobandsherry.com, and we'll post your pic. And you could be one of our weekly winners of a keepsake, My Life is All About My Cat frame with the winning photo inside, plus a hide-and-scratch cat box. Hide-and-scratch is the perfect scratching box. We want to see your cat. Yep, even that cat. Every day is Catter Day with Bob and Sherry.
Bring whatever you drink and celebrate happy hour, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page. Tonight, it's Bob and Sherry.
So because of my daughters and our family group text, my whole life is acronyms. My girls cannot be bothered to type out a sentence. They can't be bothered to type out a word. So we get a lot of texts that have, BFR in it. That means be for real, that sort of thing. And then there's the ones, obviously IRL and LOL and all that. I bet you don't know the very first time OMG was used. It's documented. So we know it is the very first appearance of OMG. I was so shocked. Anybody want to guess? You don't have to guess who did it, but give me a rough timeline. Shout out a year when you think OMG first showed up.
First showed up. I think it's within 10 years, isn't it? Is it within 10 years?
2014? No, it's been longer than 2014. Yeah. Think about it.
1996.
I think it's even older than that. I would say, I'm going to say 1970.
Okay, so Bob has
You're saying just using the letters? I mean, mm-hmm. Oh my God, OMG. It's been around forever.
But abbreviated. OMG. Max, I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're closer, way closer.
Doc, have you lost the will to live? Would you like to chime in?
Hanging with us would do that to a person.
If you do this, it'll make you feel better when it's over.
he acts like he's being waterboarded.
Max stole mine. I was going to guess somewhere in the 1970s, but maybe it was in the 80s.
Okay, so I'm going to say Max said 1970s. Doc says 1980s. Bob says 2014. Lamar says 1996. I think those are all really good guesses, but the truth is, and again, this blew my mind, that a retired British admiral from the Royal Navy wrote a letter to Sir Winston Churchill to share his response to some of the headlines of the day during World War II. And he wrote, OMG. And then in parentheses, he wrote, oh my God, in case Winston Churchill didn't understand what OMG meant.
Really? Really?
Is that not amazing. Such a shock? Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Max, you were way off, Max. You were way off. I thought you had it.
But I understand.
Wait a second. I got closer than you did.
What did you win for that? Same thing I did? Okay.
Yeah. I've got some fisherman's friend cough drops in a bag here y'all can have. But Bob said something very interesting, and it's a phenomenon that I see all the time on people's social media posts. Bob said, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. And of course, 10 years ago was 2014. And texting culture and acronyms were in full swing in 2014. But the reason 10 years ago sounds right to Bob is the same reason it sounds right to a lot of people. I see so many posts where somebody will go, oh, yeah, that was wait a minute. You mean the 90s were 30 some years ago?
Yeah, it's a shock. It really is a shock.
It is ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything has changed so dramatically. First of all, like time just flies. But for the longest time, things were sort of like technology was moving forward and culture was changing. But things were kind of same-ish. Like if you were listening to the Eagles in 1971, it was still the same experience in 1981 and still the same experience for you in roughly 1991. And then it started changing so dramatically that all of our points of reference are kind of whack. I see this every day on threads and Twitter and Instagram. People going, wait a minute, I just realized that Genie in a Bottle came out in the 90s, which were not 5 years ago. Like, it's not just you or us or me. It's everybody is having this weird time slip problem, which is interesting.
I want to comment on two things. I didn't know that about OMG. I remember, I think I know where WTF came from. That was the first time that I met the manager at the old station. I just, oh, yeah. And the other thing is rock and roll was supposed to be gone. You know, rock music within 5 years, even Elvis Presley thought it would be gone after just a few years. Rock and roll has been around like 65 years, something like that. There's never been a popular music type of music that has lasted longer. You know, you've got four generations and no end in sight. Yeah, you're exactly right.
So there you go. OMG. It's been around a lot longer than you think. I'm going to text my daughters and tell them Winston Churchill and OMG. OMG. And then when they roll their eyes at me, I'm going to reply BFR. It's Bob and Sherry.
Now, let's open up the Bob and Sherry Archive Vault.
Oh, God, talking about unrequited love, I flashed back to a very cringy memory, and I have so many cringy memories to choose from, but this one's really bad. So in like 10th grade, I had the most desperate crush on this boy. Like, I was, like, the sight of him would make me physically sick. Cold sweat. Have you ever had a crush on someone that was so extreme that you would get nauseous and break out into a cold sweat if they crossed the room?
I have.
Yes.
Yeah. So I had this crush on this boy. And he, of course, was like a grade ahead of me and did not know I was alive. And if he did know I was alive, he probably thought I was a trembling weirdo since I was unable to speak or behave normally in his presence. And of course, he had a girlfriend who was perfect, who was also in his grade. And I decided that the only way that I could cure myself of this crush that was like a fever, it was like a virus, it was awful. The only way I could cure myself of it was...
Tie him to a bed and break his legs?
No, was by making sure that I saw him with his girlfriend as much as possible so that I could see that he was with her and that I had no hope. Oh. Like aversion therapy, right?
A reality tour.
A reality tour. Now, the problem, it sounds good on paper, right? Let's facing reality. This boy loves another. So it sounds good. Like, go watch this boy love another. Make sure you see it. Burn it into your brain that there's no hope for you. Sounds good on paper. Here's the reality. What I became was this weird, creepy stalker who they would constantly catch watching them, like at parties and games.
They would catch you?
Of course. Because I'm, as my husband will tell you, I can't whisper and I'm no good at staring. I get caught every time. So now I'm over here trying to be medicinal and therapeutic. Like, all right, I will watch him with her. Look, he's holding her hand. Oh, this kid is like having a poison knife stabbed into my heart over and over again. But I'm going to see this and I'm going to force my brain to believe it. But what would happen is I would be staring at them so intently, trying to cure myself of this unrequited love.
Right.
That they would feel it.
Yeah.
It's like the Friday night dance.
Right.
The football game, the party, they would feel it.
Right.
And they would slowly turn around, and there I would be with my giant eyes boring into them.
Yeah, you can't pick up, because if you're in that situation as the girlfriend was, you do pick up a vibe of somebody who's attracted to your boyfriend.
And it's a hardwired human instinct to feel people looking at you. Like, you can, I don't know how it works, but you can feel it. So it's the cafeteria at school. It's lunchtime. And my high school, we had a different schedule every day. So the schedule kind of rotated through the week. So you were at lunch at different times and with different kids every single day of the week. So the two of them didn't always have lunch together. And I wasn't always in lunch with one or both of them. But you can be sure on the days where that worked out, there I'd be. Just my eyes just boring into them. And I know that they, because I was a grade younger, so they probably thought, who is this little weirdo?
You know, it's so much easier for kids today, because all you have to do is get a hold of your best friend and say, this is what I need you to do. Get that iPhone.
Oh, right? I could go on.
And then roll some video and then send it to me.
I could have aversion therapy on her Instagram today.
Right, exactly.
Instead of staring at them at the game and at the party and at the lunch line.
That's true. Just go on Instagram.
I could just open up my Instagram and she'd be like, man, crush Monday. I love you, Billy. You're just
me. That's exactly what's going to be on there. And there's going to be nothing but great looking photographs of interesting scenes, because that's what everybody does.
And they always have so much fun together. Oh, it's Valentine's Day. Look what my boyfriend got me. Meanwhile, my Instagram, which is called Tiny Weirdo Stalker Girl, it's just close-ups of my eyes, right?
Like we said, you got to look at that situation. Worst. You're keeping yourself from meeting other people. You got to let it go.
Oh, it's
just
so painful.
Just let it go. It is. But the truth will set you free.
Or make you cry.
Bring whatever you drink and celebrate Happy Hour, 7 p.m. Eastern, live on the Bob and Sherry Facebook page. Tonight, it's Bob and Sherry.
There has been a new pedestrian footbridge suspended across a ravine in Italy, and it's the highest of its kind in Europe. It goes 175 meters or 574 feet above the void there. I mean, that's how high up you are. It connects two picture-perfect locations, Solano and Montesto Santo. And it's over this valley, the Valnerina Valley. The walk is just under a half a mile long. It takes 30 to 45 minutes to walk it. The adrenaline doesn't just come from being suspended over the chasm. It also comes from going up a 223-foot incline, going straight up. And it's, they call it the Tibetan Bridge. It adds all these thrills because the slats are set apart. So each step you take, there's open air underneath that, if you can imagine. Okay.
No way.
I mean,
no way.
I mean, it's a thousand. It's about 1,000 steps to cross the half mile bridge, and if you set your foot down in the wrong position, things could get bad. But you have harnesses on. Everybody has a harness, so it's hooked to a cable, so you couldn't fall if you tried to. The bridge, which opened up for the Easter holiday, now it's a maximum of 90 visitors per hour. You have to have reservations. You have to have suitable footwear, and you've got to be, you can't be any shorter than 4 feet, because I guess you can, maybe you could fall through the slats. I don't know. But the tickets are available online. Because of bad weather, it may be closed. But, hey, if you get over there and you're in Italy, what a great place. I mean, and if there's beautiful pictures online. It's breathtaking and scary as crap. I don't know if I could do it. I really don't know if I could.
I don't think I would. Couldn't. No, I'm also getting I'm getting a Wile E. Coyote sort of vibe on that. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, if anybody goes, let us know how it is. This is Bob and Sherry.
Thank you so much for listening to the Bob and Sherry podcast, the Oddcast and Talking Lamar. We would love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review, and maybe share it with a friend on Facebook, Instagram, wherever you go. And thank you again so much for listening.